And welcome, listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician and herbalist, and really excited to be here for another edition where we lead you on a journey through medicine, looking at health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. You can always get more information about some of the things that Dr. Kamai and myself are doing, the Natural Nurse, on our websites. That would be drznaturally.com, that's drznaturally.com, and naturalnurse.com. We're working on some ebooks and all kinds of interesting projects, including some of our eco tours and trips and fun things to do. And again, more information on that, naturalnurse.com. So today we have a very interesting interview, that's for sure. We have a conventional physician that's an expert in CBDs, cannabinoids, diols, which we'll talk a little bit more about. And we have Colonel Philip Blair. He's a U.S. Army, retired from the U.S. Army, and he's a family physician. And he's graduated from West Point in 1972. He went to University of Miami School of Medicine. He trained as an Army family physician. He had lots of medical assignments, which took him into the Gulf War, up to Alaska, Newfoundland. And then he developed some interesting companies, and eventually his own company, Pro Health Advisor, which provides innovative disease management by telemedicine to clients in all states. Particularly, he is an expert in the industrial hemp cannabinoidol. Actually, it's cannabinoidol. I never can say that right. CBDs, that's why they call it CBDs. And he uses that for many patients and all around the world. We're really excited that we've never really done a show on hemp or the use of cannabis as a medicine, and it's very interesting to me. I've studied it for many years, and I look forward to having Dr. Blair on to talk about it. Welcome, Dr. Blair.
Dr. Z, it's a real pleasure to be on your show. It's a true honor. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Great, yeah. So it's unusual to find, a medical doctor that's so versed in kind of naturopathic approaches to medicine. Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in natural medicine.
Well, I have been frustrated by the lack of success of modern allopathic medicine. That's a standard conventional medicine that we do. And I was looking for some better solutions with less toxicity and more improvements in thinking of the whole person. And so I've been exploring different substances and different strategies, and I came upon cannabidiol.
Yeah, very interesting. So, you know, that is a, you know, loaded word. I mean, when you go back to the, you know, history of hemp, I was just actually reading a book on the history of hemp and how it was used by the Scythians and even by the Emperor Shen Nong in 2737 BC. That was one of his first botanicals that he used. And so many cultures have used this, not only as an entheogen, which, of course, is a substance that, you know, kind of frees the mind and changes the thought patterns and things like that, and you kind of become what you think about, I guess. But also as an anti-inflammatory and immune-modulating substances. So I'm curious as to how you got interested in studying the CBDs.
Well, a colleague, a physical therapy colleague, initially introduced me to it. And then I did my research and explored the medical literature, tried it on myself, as most people do. And then I started to work with clients and using it. And what I was amazed was the almost instant transformation of people and their lives using cannabidiol. And then the rest of that is that I found that it was highly effective, it was utterly safe, and it was available right in here and now.
Well, tell us a little bit about what exactly those are, and you know, how many patients have you treated, and sort of what conditions that you use hemp oil for. What should people be thinking about? Are these people that are you know, in chronic pain? I've read you know, there was a big debate here in Connecticut where I live about the use of them as anti-epileptics. Talk a little bit about the chemistry of them and what they're used for.
Well, I think that using your terms, an adaptogen is probably the best description of cannabidiol, because it seems to stabilize the physiologic processes and it promotes homeostasis. So it's not doing something extraordinary in the sense of unphysiologic. It's just restoring the body back to normal. But for many of our population who are suffering with the chronic diseases, these this plague of modern society with obesity, diabetes, neurodegeneration, chronic pain, and so many other conditions, cannabidiol seems to be effective for so many of these problems. It's quite extraordinary. In fact, I call it the smartest molecule in the world, because it works almost contradictory in terms of how it works. It addresses so many of the body's systems that are so much involved with our common diseases. For instance, the immunity. Neurodegeneration, or in the neurologic system, the hormone system, the digestive tract, all of these are deeply rooted in our own cannabinoid system, the one that we have within our body, but the cannabidiol is effective in those particular systems and restores homeostasis to all of those areas. So quite remarkably, it is effective in so many effective areas. I'm really quite surprised. And I've been blown away by the success that I've seen using cannabidiol. In terms of the chemical structure, it's really rather a simple organic molecule that is carbon and oxygen. So there's not a whole lot to it, but it has really extraordinary properties. Now, you said earlier that it's been known for thousands of years. We've been using hemp, at least the human race has been using hemp for at least that amount of time. And it's always been in the formulary and of treatment for different diseases. And it's only a recent phenomenon within the last 100 years that we've decided that hemp and hemp products are illegal. That has not been the case, even in the United States. There are two main parts for cannabinoids. When we talk about things that come from hemp, number one is the species that is marijuana, and that has typically high levels of THC, which is a psychoactive component. Whereas the CBD is something that's generally overlooked and ignored, but I believe that it is the main ingredient for health restoring. So that cannabidiol really restores health without making you high.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, it's interesting when you look at the structures of the molecules. I have them up on my computer. They're very similar. It's so amazing that they kind of bind to these receptors in the brain. Now, you talked about these natural receptors that we have in our brain that I think I remember reading a guy named Devane that first discovered and way back when, and they were called anandamides. And tell us a little bit about what actually happens when you apply, say, the oil of the CBDs to to the body? What's the mechanisms of actions of how it's modulating so many different diseases? What do you think?
Well, right. The history of cannabidiol and the cannabinoids is quite interesting. You know, we've been studying THC and marijuana for many decades. As a result of that research, there was investigation into where these receptors were, or how it exactly worked, or how THC and marijuana worked. And it was only relatively recently, in 1990, that the system of the endocannabinoid system within the body was recognized. And it was realized that there were two main receptors for cannabinoids within the body, the CB1 and CB2. And it was also discovered that anandamide, which is the name that was given for our own endogenous, the ones we make ourselves, that was discovered, along with a few other cannabinoids that are naturally occurring. Anandamide is, the name is from Sanskrit, and it actually means the blissful.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get the parallels that it's similar to the effects that can come with THC, but it doesn't create any psychoactive high, and it's a naturally occurring. And then, Dr. Z, what we've come to learn is that this system is so complex, and it affects the whole body and every system within the body. It's quite profound. And in terms of receptors, I had specifically looking at cannabidiol, which is a variation, and cannabidiol is a phytocannabinoid coming from hemp, then it's coming from a plant, and it activates this entire comprehensive system that is a master regulator of the body, the endocannabinoid system, that is. And so cannabidiol as a phytocannabinoid coming from hemp is able to modulate and help these other different systems and return them to normal. Now, how does it do that? I tell you, the medical literature and the research that's going on this has really exploded in the last 10 years, trying to find those connections. And it seems like cannabidiol, interestingly, is called a promiscuous molecule because it interacts with so many of the body's systems and so many different type of receptors. I've counted at least 30 different receptors or systems that cannabidiol interacts with within the body. And so, you know, pinning it down to any one receptor or one process of action, like we tend to do in classic pharmacokinetics and in understanding how drugs work within the body, cannabidiol just doesn't fit that mold. It does so many things, and it does it the right way, the smart way, to improve the way the body works.
I know there's a lot of research on multiple sclerosis and spasticity. Tell us what happens when people get like MS and possibly how the CBDs work to help people with that. And why, you know, I guess the big argument, the elephant in the room is, well, there are many antispasmodics on the market out there, you know, that's for sure. Are people using these, and are these failing miserable? What's the deal with that, Dr. Blair?
Well, so often with medications that you use for these different conditions, yes, they help those conditions and they alleviate some of the symptoms, but they don't address the cause. And furthermore, the medications are typically associated with some very difficult side effects. So when you're dealing with antispasmodics, you know, they are helpful. They reduce spasm in some cases, but the percentage of effectiveness is relatively mixed. So 50% would be a good response. I don't know that specifically in MS. And then to usually you're seeing multiple drugs that are being employed. So it's not just a matter of one drug. It's more like a half a dozen drugs that are being used to help control whatever symptoms are going on. And so the huge advantage for cannabidiol is that it has a very high level of effectiveness. We're talking about 75-85%. And there are no significant side effects. And so you're not getting any of the difficulties or the complications that might come along with using other medications or interference, because there's no drug interaction that occurs with cannabidiol either.
Mm, really? So I know with epilepsy, there's quite a bit of literature on that. And what's currently, you know, used for epilepsy, you know, you have your Tegretol and your phenobarbs and Dilantin, and these are very toxic drugs. I mean, they do certainly allow people with seizures to, you know, live somewhat a normal life, but, you know, they're very, like you said, they are pretty toxic to the liver and body. And so I guess if there's something that's safer, that could be certain. But, like, I would use, for me, like, I would use other herbs besides CBDs, because I'm pretty successfully manage many of these patients without the CBDs. So I'm interested in perhaps using it, but I know there's it's extremely restricted, which we'll get into in a little bit of time. Now, what about its pain
control? But let me address the epilepsy.
Yeah, go ahead.
That
go ahead,
is
sure.
That is a very prominent and important area, and lots of research and lots of development for cannabidiol type of medications is being employed in that area. The problem with the current medications for epilepsy is, as you've described, you've got side effects from these medications that eliminate sometimes the personality of the individual taking them, or it impairs them psychologically, so they can't function very well in the real world, and they don't have their full cognitive capacity. You know, for myself and for many others, the brain is everything, and maintaining the brain and keeping it fit, coherent, and functional, and really that's where we get the joy in our life, and maintaining optimal functioning of the brain is key and important. So if people are using anti-epileptic drugs to the extent that it wipes out their personality and their humanity, then yes, you're keeping somebody alive, but it's kind of like a life support system. Still, the uses that are going on now, there are Epidiolex is the product that's being experimented with in the United States and actually many places in the world, and it's almost 98% cannabidiol, and it seems to be very effective for helping people. The problem is that it's available only to a limited number of people. It's very restrictive, and I think I saw that the costs were running about $1,500 a month for using the Epidiolex. Still, it's a threshold for moving cannabidiol into the mainstream of use and having validated it as an effective anti-epileptic. But I have to tell you that some of the clients that I've been working with have found the more natural products of hemp cannabidiol more effective. And it may be because when you purify cannabidiol, and this is so much different than what you normally encounter with usual drugs, as we think in terms of, oh, we need more purity. But in the case of cannabidiol, it likes the entourage. It likes the other substance that it's connected with. So a plant-derived substance of cannabidiol seems to be more effective than the purified version. And that's probably because of the flavonoids, the terpenes, and the other cannabinoids that are associated with the plant-extracted formulation.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. But I guess the problem is with those natural agents, do you get more of the THC, which I think is what the big oppositional forces are reeling about, you know, the THC part of it and the euphoria part of it, or what's your feelings on that?
Well, that's only when it comes from marijuana, from plants that contain significant amount of THC. You see, what some companies do, really quality companies, are getting the CBD grown organically from farmers who have grown the substance for decades and through family generations. In a pure and wholesome soil, and then they are using the latest techniques of supercritical carbon and liquid carbon dioxide extraction to get out the valuable substances that are there, and that's the way they're purifying the plant derived substance. So it's a high quality. And those plants naturally do not contain very significant amounts of THC, just minor amounts, and they're tested on a regular basis by those countries that are growing CBD. Now typically seems to be the best products right now are coming from Northern Europe, and that really right now excludes China. But there, no doubt, there is some in production. I'm just not aware of it or whose product actually comes from the Chinese manufacturer. But you've hit on a really major point: is that quality is everything, and where it comes from is everything. Because in terms of legality, CBD, if it comes from marijuana, is still illegal and highly controlled. But CBD that comes from the hemp plant is actually legal, and there's no difficulty. It's got complete availability across the states and mostly international as well.
So wait a minute. That's very important news. I mean, I had no idea. So let's backtrack. We mostly, you're saying that very quality CBDs are extracted from industrial hemp, which is the really tall plant that's grown, you know, a lot in Canada and all around the world for its fiber and its seed oil and those things like that, and for actually making clothing and things like that. And then we could actually get a tremendously powerful medicine from that, which is legal.
That's exactly right. But
really,
you know, I hate
wow.
to use the word industrial because that implies that it's
it's low
product.
Quality. It's like the difference between really good flaxseed oil and something you'd get at Home Depot, linseed oil, right? The industrial. Yeah, it's not a great word. I understand that.
No, so I try to avoid using the word industrial because these plants and these plants are, I guess it would be like your favorite pet or a dog, because you have different varieties. There's big ones, there's short ones, there's aggressive ones, there's lap dogs, and there's all different varieties. The same is true for hemp. And so these plants that we're extracting that come from the hemp plants are typically those that have been designed and created for the qualities of CBD and the lowness of the THC. So you've eliminated the psychoactive portion of it right there, and you've cleaned up the plant. Now, the extraction comes from the stalk and stem. You're exactly right. And taken from the stalk and stem, it's legal. There's sufficient amounts of CBD that can be extracted without the THC and provide a really high quality product that contains some of the other substances, the other associated entourage that is beneficial with using CBD.
Now, do you need a prescription for this CBD foil?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, most doctors wouldn't really know much about cannabidiol because this is pretty new science. My inquiries among colleagues is that they have had no education on the endocannabinoid system, even though it's intimately associated with autoimmunity, inflammatory bowel disease, neurodegeneration, and hormone effects in terms of metabolism. So all of these things are going on, but your doctors are generally ignorant. And I think there's many different reasons why that's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even recall learning about it too much, even in naturopathic college back then, you know.
No, and so you're probably not even aware that of all the cannabinoids that are out there. I mean, a big surprise, the cannabinoids are really regulating our world for pleasure and success. For instance, chocolate. Chocolate contains three different cannabinoids, including anandamide, which is the one that we have endogenously in our bodies.
Right. So does echinacea, for that matter. It binds to one of the cannabinoids, and that may be one of its anti-inflammatory effects. But it's, you know, again, people aren't talking about these types of things. So
yeah, and truffles. I mean, what is so exciting about truffles? Why are truffles more valuable than gold per ounce? And the reason is probably the cannabinoids that are contained within them. So these substances are there. And then in our behaviors, too, the cannabinoids, our endocannabinoids, are really working. So what gives you the runner's high? Well, the runner's high, we've said, are endorphin-related. But guess what? Endorphins can't cross the blood-brain barrier. So it actually turns out to be anandamide, our endogenous cannabinoid that the body produces and feeds the brain with.
Right, but so the CBDs can bind to those types of receptors, but it's a different type of high than the THC high. Are we on the same page with that?
CBD doesn't produce any kind of high. In fact, it's the opposite. You know, I said before that CBD
but our endogenous, is small, but the endogenous ones do, huh?
Yeah, amazingly, CBD will restore memory, but it blocks anxiety. Mm. So it deadens pain, but it restores the feeling in neuropathy. I mean, you have these almost contradictory sort of things that are going on. That's why I think that the adaptogen concept is probably the best, where CBD does the right thing. It takes care of the problem. It corrects the right problem without the side effects or without the drug interactions that you typically see with good medication.
Hmm. Interesting. So you can... are there risks with the CBD hemp oil? It sounds like it's pretty safe, and so
nothing that I have found. I have found no significant adverse effects coming from CBD, and no significant drug interactions. Now, I've read a lot about drug interactions and claims that there is potential for drug interactions, and that's typically what you see on the internet when you do some searches. But in fact, in my way that I have been using and consulting with people, probably at least 750 people I've helped with cannabidiol, I have not seen any major reaction, any significant drug interaction, and no significant side effect. Some people don't like it, or they have some minor problems with it, but those are easily overcome and really adjusted.
I have a question about will it create problems for employers and employees that are doing drug testing? If there's even a trace of THC in there, will they lose their job? And have there been any legal cases which have looked into that?
Well, we've had there's been no legal cases that people have reported in some rare instances that they have been positive. But these are not controlled studies. There's no significant THC that is in a good quality product. And
I mean,
cannabinoid, cannabidiol product, that is. But you have to look at, people who are investigating or trying to find out what the best product is, they need to look at the analysis, find out what exactly is in the product. So it's really important that there should be transparency by that company so that you can see what the laboratory analysis says about the products that they're coming and the scrutiny that the company gives towards looking at the testing that is involved.
Yeah, because I have an individual patient of mine that, you know, works for the New York Sanitation Company, and that's about all I can tell you because of privacy. But he, you know, I mean, he swears on a stack of Bibles that he doesn't smoke cannabis and was using the CBD oil for a particular malady, and, you know, he ran into some trouble when he tested positive for THC, and then so, you know, he was questioning me, well, is it in there? And I said, well, there's probably a trace in there, but I wasn't sure if it's enough to, and how sensitive the drug testing is for certain places that have zero tolerance for any THC. So we want to be careful out there, folks, and maybe get in touch with Dr. Blair, who can, you know, give us advice on good products that are well made and won't jeopardize your job, because that's a serious thing. So it's 10:30, so we need to take a break, Dr. Blair. And when we come back, we're going to talk about maybe how one takes the hemp oil and dosing, and where can you buy it? I mean, can you get it at, you know, CVS, the health food store, wherever, and certainly more information about yourself and some of your consultations and whatnot. So we're going to take a quick break right here at the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z Show. You're listening to Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnamonic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back, listeners, to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Isn't that a great spice, cinnamon? And, of course, we didn't even talk about all its wonderful effects with blood sugar. But today we're talking with Dr. Philip W. Blair. He's a retired Army doctor, and he's a family physician, went to West Point, University of Miami School of Medicine, and he is an expert in using CBDs for patients and is elucidating us tremendously on this misunderstood and politically charged substance, that's for sure. I mean, why is it so politically charged, Dr. Blair? Welcome back.
Well, I think it goes back to the 30s when we left Prohibition, when Prohibition was overturned and government agencies were trying to create a new public enemy. And so they created cannabis as the major enemy. And then Richard Nixon in the 70s started the war on drugs, and he targeted marijuana because it's easily identified. The momentum just has kept up where the government, and I was a part of that system, was so adamantly against marijuana as with the thought that some mythologic sort of danger that marijuana really poses to society in some way. And that has just been maintained, and it's been difficult, if not impossible, to chip away at the rules and the legislations that have kept it under control. But even there's a lot of misunderstanding about that, because cannabidiol is not a Schedule I substance. I've heard people quote and say, oh, it's a controlled substance, Schedule I. It is not. And there's a number of reasons why that's true. First off, I won't go into that right now, but it was very clear that does not fit into the design and the listing as a Schedule I drug. And then in 2004, the Drug Enforcement Agency tried to take control of CBD from hemp, but they failed. And in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said that the Drug Enforcement Agency did not have the authority to regulate from CBD or these natural substances coming from industrial hemp. It's out of their purview. So and I think a lot of the real success and in terms of making cannabidiol available to everybody has really come as a result of that court statement, as well as improved products that are available.
Very interesting. So now, how do you dose the CBD and how does one use it?
Well, if you've got a good product, if you've got a good quality product that you should know and you should be able to tell exactly how much cannabidiol is in it. And that we're really talking about the cannabidiol molecule. A lot of times what providers – and it's available in health food stores and it's available online. It's sometimes difficult to figure out how much actual cannabidiol is in the product. In fact, there was a survey that was done of different products with claiming to have cannabidiol in it, and there was a wide variation on the lower end of what was actually contained. In fact, some of the products didn't actually contain any cannabidiol. So it does behoove everyone to take a close look at the products and find out if it contains the amount of CBD. And then you need to look at what's called the CBD ratio. How much CBD is in actual, in terms of milligrams, in the product versus the total amount of oil that's contained in it? Because CBD is an oil-soluble molecule, and so it mixes well with things like hemp seed oil as well as coconut oil. So these are common dilutants that are used in it, and you need to know how much is actually there. Typically, the label on the bottle indicates how many milliliters of total oil there are, not and they may say hemp oil, but it doesn't indicate necessarily the amount of cannabidiol that's there.
So what are some good, reliable products out there? You can feel free to mention those to the listeners if you want to.
Well, I discovered Elixinol, Elixinol, and I've been pretty consistent in using that product because of all the things that we talked about before, mm-hmm. in terms of the quality, the transparency, and the ethics of the company in terms of trying to further the education of users, of people who want recovery from those illnesses and those difficult conditions that they're being challenged with. I don't have much experience with any other products. There is a group that's a nonprofit organization in Colorado called the Realm of Caring. That's Realm of Caring. And they are doing a great work in terms of providing products as well as advice and information for users as well as providers in how to use cannabidiol for effectively for different conditions. In fact, the Realm of Caring has partnered and is working with Johns Hopkins Medical Center to gather up information and about people using cannabidiol and cannabinoids in general for different conditions. And since the research in the area is so restricted, then by opening it up to people revealing their experience with it, hopefully there will be enough momentum and persuasion that we can change some of the laws and the rules that are out there about both research and the use of cannabidiol.
So if someone orders these types of things from the internet, say they have a lot of inflammation and there's a lot of studies that prove the effectiveness of the cannabinoids for decreasing inflammation, and maybe they work at a deep cellular level and modulate NF-kappa beta and like a lot of these other powerful components for arthritis and rheumatism and things like that, irritable bowel, whatnot. But then if someone orders that, they're not going to be scrutinized because CBD is completely legal. Now, why can't we grow hemp in the United States then? Because I thought that was maybe I'm outdated in my knowledge. But
no, you're
exactly
right. There are grow areas for hemp, but it is felt it has been restricted. Now, Canada grows huge amounts, and we spend $500 million a year importing hemp products from Canada. But it's considered a dangerous substance, I guess, in the United States, and so it's been outlawed, and rules against it are very restrictive. Now that seems to be breaking down, and there's recognition of what a valuable product hemp could be. I mean, the industrial uses of hemp are quite extraordinary. Ford Motor Company actually created cars that were built out of hemp products.
Yeah, they used the fiber. I remember reading that.
Extraordinarily resilient.
They used the fiber of the hemp and mixed it with a natural resin and made kind of like a natural fiberglass, and it was very strong.
Yes. There's interesting videos of that, of using a sledgehammer to slam on the body of the car and without any visible impact on it. So quite extraordinary. And, you know, it's a shame that hemp has not been employed, because it could represent a major industrial move for an improvement in jobs and productivity for the entire United States.
Have you ever seen the I do a lot of rheumatology work and have a lot of sports injuries, patients, tendinitis, chronic, like dequer veins, tendinitis, and other types of things, tennis elbow. Have you ever seen the hemp oil be very good topically for those purposes, Dr. Blair?
Well, I have. It's been good topically, but it's also good systemically. So taking it orally can reduce that inflammation all over the body. And you're exactly right. The cannabidiol is very effective for inflammation. I thought you might be asking about dosage for inflammation, and I thought I'd relate that. What I typically see is on the order of about 15 milligrams of cannabidiol as being an effective anti-inflammatory dose. And I would use that two or three times a day. Now, everybody is different when they're using cannabidiol, and so that you have to find out what works for you. I've seen people with pain that have required less than a milligram, and they have dramatic reductions in pain. And other people who are not able to get a handle on the pain until they get it to up to 200 milligrams. And so there's such a huge variation, and it doesn't depend on body size or the severity of the illness. It appears to be something going on within our own endocannabinoid functionality, whether our bodies are tuned up. Another important factor is omega-3s. I know we usually think of omega-3s as oils, as being very important oils and essential oils, but it turns out that their essentiality is actually on the order of stimulating the endocannabinoid system, of making it ready to operate with the other endocannabinoids. And so you get a boost from it, and omega-3s are important for that reason, not because they're metabolized, but because they incorporate into the endocannabinoid system. And so what we see with cannabidiol is that it doesn't matter whether you're eating, you take it with food or without food, it doesn't cause any stomach irritation. In fact, the inflammation, the anti-inflammation that occurs with CBD certainly extends to the gut. And so, in fact, so dramatically so that it will resolve, in my experience, Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis in a couple weeks with the right dose. Now, that generally requires a higher dose, and I typically see on the order of 60 milligrams, maybe twice a day, for controlling those inflammatory bowel diseases. And I've had people that 1 month out have clear endoscopies as a result of using cannabidiol.
Now, the products are relatively expensive. I mean, I think I've seen like a bottle of this go for like almost $100, which is a lot more than taking, say, you know, curcuma extract for your inflammation, you know, or the really good Mariva extract. So what's generally the price range of the CBDs, and will they go down as more consumers use it?
Well, since I've been working with cannabidiol over the last 2 years, I've seen the price cut in half. And the more demand for cannabidiol and more successful we have, it becomes available, then more volume and better producing is going along. So the prices should be coming down. It's not a matter of exclusivity. These plants are everywhere. You know, hemp grows in almost all climates, and so you can be very successful with it. So that's a matter of making it popular enough so that there's a large enough production and the supply and demand is being met. You're right. The price of $100 is not unusual for a full month course of cannabidiol. But you got to compare that to some of the other medications that are out there. I know people don't like to do that because if the medicine is paid for through their plan, their medical plan, then they don't pay anything or a very small amount. Whereas if you look at the actual costs of the drug, which I frequently do as a disease manager, we're talking about thousands of dollars per dose. And cannabidiol doesn't even come close to that. But okay, how do you afford that as this product or the cannabidiol? And you have to think about your quality of life. And what I typically see is lives are transformed with cannabidiol. People are restored, and it's almost like a fountain of youth in terms of, well, they don't get superhuman. They just get back to normal. But back to normal 10 years in the past or 20 years in the past. And so they're different people and they're restored function. What's the price of that?
Now, do these hemp oil drops, which they call tinctures, are they the ones that can be used topically as well if you wanted to rub some of that on? Are they alcohol-based? Are they pure oil? Being a tincture, usually when I, think of tincture, that's an alcohol preparation or other solvents used as the menstruum, they call that, to extract the active. So are these hemp oil drops, how would one use those?
So it does come in, I think I mentioned before, it is an oil. But it's very absorbable through the skin, and so it can be nicely absorbed in a topical fashion, and the results are typically seen within about 10 minutes. And so the concentration that I have used for topical application has been on the order of either 10 milligrams per milliliter or 30 milligrams per milliliter. It comes in either hemp oil or in coconut oil, and it's really quite well absorbed. A couple applications are very effective. In fact, I've seen some topical applications for bug bites, for insect stings, and for viral cold sores. It actually is quite effective, reduces the pain immediately, and seems to enhance the healing.
Yeah, I would like to try some on some patients that have some tendonitis, and maybe as an emollient, it could be part of massage lotion or massage oil, working it into the liniments for, some people that are pretty banged up.
Yeah, cannabidiol actually seems to come in many different forms. A lot of people ask, well, how do I take it? Well, I jokingly tell them, well, any way you can get it into the body, it can be extraordinarily effective. Now, main way is orally. But you've talked about tinctures, and yeah, these tinctures do not contain any alcohol. They're just oil. But they come in a wide variety of concentrations. And so that's why I focus on the number of milligrams of cannabidiol specifically, because that hopefully cuts through some of the different products that are out there. But patients have to do their own kind of calculation to find out, well, how much cannabidiol is actually in this. So in terms of different forms of cannabidiol, there are concentrates that are really, really dense amount of CBD, as much as 100 milligrams per milliliter. And then the tinctures range from 1 milligram to 30 milligrams in terms of their concentrations. And there are some new products coming out in terms of topical products, as well as something new that has been developed. It's called liposomes. And with liposomes, they've been able to wrap some protein around really small cannabidiol particles called micelles. And the result is to make this water-soluble. And that means it's easy to mix with water and mix with your favorite beverage and to drink that. And there seems to be an increased potency for the liposomes, a better bioavailability, making it better absorbed, and the better effect. Don't really have conclusive results on that, but it's very positive what we're seeing. And I forgot to mention capsules. Capsules are available too, 15 milligrams, easy to take, and fit with our busy lifestyles and requiring, keep on the move, and an easy way to regulate the dose. I would say probably the best product that you could get is one of the concentrates, because they've got the highest concentrations of supporting substances, like I mentioned before, with terpenes, the flavonoids, and polyphenols. But the problem with most of these concentrates, it's a really strong tasting, and there's an inconsistency of the dose because you're squeezing it out of a tube because of the density. But some of the new product applicators are really, really good, and they do a great job of precise and precision measurement with every dose.
Diabetics, we only have about 2 minutes left, but I know diabetic neuropathy is a huge problem. Have you seen it help?
It's terrific. I've seen, in fact, I think cannabidiol is absolutely essential in diabetes for preventing the complications of diabetes. I'm talking about neuropathy, and I've seen it reverse substantial portions of neuropathy. As well as protecting the pancreas from further deterioration and the kidneys from the ravages of kidney disease.
How could folks get in contact with you, or if they have questions about this before they pursue this?
Well, they're certainly welcome to contact me through my website, which is prohealthadvisor.com. And they can also contact Lixinol. There's a substantial amount of information about the products that they have available.
Very nice.
I do a disease management program, and so mine is broader than just cannabidiol.
Okay. That's very good. Dr. Blair, wow, this was like one of the most amazing programs that we've done in a while, and what a fascinating botanical. I learned so much today. And it's funny because I'm a professor of botanical medicine, yet, I've kind of shied away from teaching people about this because, I guess I was a little afraid. And you certainly opened up a whole Pandora's box in my mind of this fascinating subject. Thanks for being our guest.
It was my pleasure.
Great. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Remember, you can contact us at naturalnurse.com or drznaturally.com. Stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.